Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session for the Mesa City Council for Thursday, March 15th, 2012. I'd like to excuse Councilmember Glover, who is attending a funeral this morning. So I'm sorry to hear that he has to do that. But, we'll begin with the first item on the agenda, which is to review the agenda for next Monday's regular City Council meeting. Okay, page 2, items 3A through 3C. Items 3D through 5B. Councilmember Higgins.
Items 5A and 5B are IT purchases of, you know, servers, hardware, and software. And I think it's been a couple months ago we had other purchases that I asked if we could actually see the 2 or 3 year replacement map that you have, and I still have not received any information. So just so you know, I'm having a hard time approving any more stuff until I know where we're going. So
you said that overall plan, that we'd be happy to schedule sessions with you. We actually, it's almost in concert with the budget as well. When we do our budget presentation, we're going to be talking about exactly that, the life cycle, the five-year roadmap, what departments are asking for, and the planning that we have, including these life cycle programs such as the servers that you're seeing in front of you.
Now, Chris, Mayor, can we do this in a study session? No. This is a big, I mean, the map replacement.
I think what Diane said, we're going to do it as part of their budget presentation. Is that not, would that, you want it sooner or what?
Yeah. Because, well, yeah, I mean, this was a request from months ago.
We're scheduled for April 26th for that.
Should we move it up?
No, I mean, in reality, I can't remember. I went back into agendas to see when the last time this kind of stuff, and I think we were in 20, I mean, it was last year. So, yeah, I really have a hard time moving ahead on any more expenses until we know what's the plan, since we've been looking for it for a while.
And I'm totally happy to come before and do that. These particular expenditures today are part of the actual infrastructure roadmap that is the life cycle, that's not new. I mean, it's the one that we've been working on for the last 4 years. What I do want to show you in addition to that is the application life cycle that we want to put together. But yeah, this is part of the infrastructure program that we have today.
Yeah, and for some reason, when I asked if we could have a review of that a few months ago, you said you were updating and we couldn't, like, actually review it yet. So maybe there's just miscommunication.
Yeah. Diane, maybe you could meet with the councilwoman.
Will do. Okay.
Yeah, let's updo that, because it sounds like we got the cart before the horse here. I mean, I get it that you're going to update the life cycle, but I think what the councilmember is asking for is, if we're going to do this and it's part of the life cycle, she'd like to review the life cycle so that she can see how this is part of the life cycle, which.
Thank you.
So, okay.
Perfect. We'll be
all right.
Schedule.
5C through 5G. Councilmember Higgins?
Item 5G, Mayor. It is water treatment issue, I guess, for the new Lehigh crossings. And the question of this is, aren't those costs, aren't they supposed to be tied into, like, I'm not thinking this morning, the user or development fees for that subdivision, and it's not really coming out of the City Mesa budget?
Actually, in this case, no, because it's a regional PRV that serves more than just this development. I have a map, actually.
But isn't it, if I only needed because of this development, is adding on to the whole system?
Let me see if I can pull up Elmo and I can show you.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm going to go with on. Yeah, but this does serve the Lehigh Crossing area. And if you think about the Lehigh Crossing area, it's actually, right, it's down the bluff. So we're going to need a pressure-reducing valve to get, so that pressures aren't too high in people's homes there. And there is the Lehigh Crossing development there. Oh, boy. Let me try this. Sorry, I have no idea how to use this thing.
You're getting help. Kevin's running.
Oh, good. Thank you. Oh, look.
Oh, you
I got it up.
Hey.
All right. Let's see. Now. Okay, so PRV 36, this is the one that we're proposing to install. So it's here, and Lehigh Crossing is, like, in this area, but this is actually a much larger area than just Lehigh Crossing. So, no, it's not something that we would expect the developer to pick up as part of his development since it's regional.
So what is helping the other houses in the area that are currently there? Do they have the same problem?
Yeah, and we have other additional PRVs. We've got quite a few in this area because it's kind of a little mini zone where we have problems with pressures. Okay. So we have PRV 26 and PRV 31 that also kind of help this area. So, but this, there's a new line that's going to be coming in. This line here is not yet built, and this is, I can't remember if it's all of this line or just most of this line that's installed by the developer.
Okay.
So it's to support this line as it comes on.
And how are these different than, like, in Los Angeles, a lot of people have pressure reducers that they're responsible to pay for and take care of?
Right. And, again, that goes back to whether it serves a regional purpose or a localized purpose. And there are individual PRVs up in the northeast part of our service area where really it's just, like, literally an individual home or, you know, two or three houses mm-hmm. in that particular area. In those cases, the PRVs are – oh. Okay, sorry. So in those cases, those PRVs, they're not regional. So those are just part of someone's house. It's like their own internal plumbing, basically.
But it's, yeah, so I still don't see how that's different because it's the pressure coming in and it's kind of confusing.
Right. Well, we have a standard range of pressures that we consider to be acceptable. And so, but some people have problems with those standard pressures. And so it's more of like an individual choice.
Got it.
It depends on the kinds of appliances that you have in your home.
Great. Okay.
That makes sense?
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Sure.
Well, the other thing, though, is that even if it's a regional, that's what impact fees help pay for, too.
I mean, yes.
There's impact fees that with every house in Lehigh Crossing that they'll pay. They go into the pool, and impact fees aren't a dollar-for-dollar thing. What they do is we'll float bonds. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. We float bonds to build the system, and the impact fees go in basically to the pool of funds we have to service that debt and to pay. But that it isn't a we'll collect it up front and we'll then do it. Most of the time we front the money even for regional issues, and then as development happens, we collect the impact fees that then goes to provide the funds to service that debt that we've incurred.
Correct, Mayor. It's not a reimbursement
right.
of actual expenditures.
Right. It goes into a pot.
Formula.
It goes into a pot.
Right.
We budget that pot. When we put it out, we anticipate that. But you can't anticipate when development will happen, as we've seen in this downturn, which a lot
right.
of communities, you know, found themselves really challenged because they incurred bond debt hoping or anticipating that houses would be continue to be built. Mm-hmm. At the same pace through 2008, 2009, 2010 as they were in 2005. You know, we look at it on an overall basis that is anticipated, but once again, if it comes in, it comes in. And
it's safer, more conservatively.
Yes.
We bond at without necessarily a calculation
of
impact
money.
Fees.
Yeah.
If they're collected, obviously we use them first to pay down the debt,
right.
which will help us in our calculations out in the future, but we don't necessarily anticipate a certain level
right.
of impact fees into the future.
But to get back to the original question, as those impact fees are paid, that is intended to have that developer, a homeowner, share in the cost of the regional improvements that were made that benefit that particular development.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's the impact fees are a way for us to pay for regional infrastructure and to have
right.
those developments help pay into that.
And if a developer comes in and puts in infrastructure on their own that we might have done, and we said, listen, you're not far enough along, and
right.
they come in, and often a developer will put in regional infrastructure, they will receive,
they receive
an
credit.
Offset or
a
credit
mm-hmm.
against
right.
those impact fees. So it hopefully balances out
yeah.
in the long run.
And PRVs, Councilwoman Higgins, PRVs can be confusing. It just depends on whether they're regional, whether they're individual. We have both in our system. And, in fact, I heard from a customer just the other day who was confused about that, and it turned out to be his own individual PRV for his own house. And it is confusing, but we work with people and help them understand exactly what they have and why they have it.
Can I talk to you about the water pressure at my house after the meeting?
Sure, Mayor. Absolutely.
Thank you, Ms. Sorensen.
Doctor.
Oh, excuse me, Dr. Sorensen. I was corrected. Items 6A through 6F.
I don't like the comment or the laugh.
He's
the
Vice Mayor. Items 7A through 7D. items 7E through 8A. Okay. The next item on the agenda is to review, or is, no, is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the housing and community development budget issues. This is not the same item issue we talked about last week. This is the department budget, not the actual CDBG budget.
Yeah, what goes to the agencies? This is
yes. It just is coincidental that you happened to come back the week after you were here talking about a completely different issue.
Yes. Good morning, Mayor, Council members. This is for our department part of it and our budget, and we thought we'd start off with sharing with you some of the accomplishments that we've had over the past few years. We have completed 36 new homes, 24 have sold. Out of that 36, we have two that will be finished here in the next few weeks, and I think we have one pending sale?
Two
pending sales. We've also completed over 100 emergency projects. Those are the emergency repairs that we do out of the rehab portion. Over five homes have been cleared of lead-based paint, and we have put in front of you our quarterly newsletter. We started that last year in an effort to enhance our communication with our subrecipients. Some of the program improvements we've made, we have enhanced our accounting and financial reporting. We have a new contract template that we worked with our legal, and really it's a much, much better process this year. We got about halfway through streamlining our application and award process. We plan to finish that up this year, and hopefully this next year we can really see those improvements. We also changed our entire housing side of things. This is our voucher program, from a task-oriented process to a case management process in an effort to streamline that process. We have closed out 6 of 8 audits. We have worked with HUD consultants on creating new procedure manuals for both the NSP and home program, and we've worked very hard on trying to train staff this year to increase capacity. Some of the challenges we still face is the continued reduction in the federal funding, and with that reduction, we are constantly getting new rules. So the part of the admin part of administering these grants are becoming more and more difficult, yet we're seeing less and less money to do that. We also
Let me ask something, and this is this is sort of a loaded question, but I'm getting to the point with some of these issues where you have reduced funding, increased requirements. Do you think we're close to the point, or are we approaching the point where we just throw up our hands and say,
We've talked about it.
Why do this?
Is this
worth it?
Yeah, Mayor and Council, it really is getting difficult to the point where, and you'll see what happens is that because the rules are so challenging and with limited amount of resources to administer, when we either reimburse for things that are ineligible or things, we end up spending a lot of more than just the administration side. We have to repay back, findings that maybe, this expense wasn't eligible, and so it's becoming a larger hit. It's more than just the actual expenditure to administer the fund from the general fund, but there's a lot of other exposures, and it's a tough call because, it's one of the resources that allows funds to flow to some of our agencies.
Well, in its base model, it would seem that this is the kind of contribution that has the most direct impact on our community. Mm-hmm. But as with many things, especially in the federal government, that mission seems to be lost in the overburdening regulations that almost take away from the mission. It almost forces us to redirect and spend more of our time administering the program than in the program itself. So you got to wonder, is it really benefiting the people, or is it just keeping a lot of federal bureaucrats busy?
Well, one of the conversations we've had with the committee is one of the things that makes it very difficult, regardless as of size of the contracts that we meet out to the agencies, each one of them takes a significant amount of effort. And maybe there's some philosophical issues we can address as far as if we could reduce even the number of contracts that we have to administer and deal with them in a larger amounts, that may be one way to help, because really the smaller contracts take up, if not as much, maybe more time, especially if it's a smaller agency.
Because they're not as sophisticated, and we have to basically hold their hand more than we would
with
this.
Yeah, and we're learning, too. We're not, you know, there's a lot of improvement on our side, certainly, and we're, you know, yeah. Tammy just came back in from training she was getting, but you have to stay on top of it. And it is a lot of effort for, again, $3 million plus, well, I guess it's actually a total. Federal funds is what do we get?
All of the grants that we work with is around $40 million. But a large part of it is the Section 8 voucher program.
Yeah, so really the part that we really focus on administratively is what? How much would that be?
Maybe five.
$5 million at the most.
Okay.
And it keeps decreasing, and we keep giving less dollars for the admin side, and you're going to see we're having to pare back that again. So.
Okay. All right.
To answer your question, it feels like we're on the road to that position, but we're not there yet. So it's something we need to keep assessing.
All right.
Again, as part of those past audits, we are on HUD's radar, so they will continue to audit us until they feel that we have gotten to the position that they're comfortable. We have yet to determine the impact of the foreclosures. There are a lot of homes out there that we have participated in with some federal funds that went into foreclosure. So we're looking at all of those. Do we have a risk in those? You know, how do we clean up a lot of that? Again, a lot of staff resources go into these type of things. As we continue to reduce the staff, it becomes more and more difficult to continue to make improvements, to stay on top of the training that we need to stay on. Again, HUD has been pretty good about trying to get some localized training for us, but for the most part, most of the training we need is not local. So you have training or travel expenses on top of that. Currently, we have about over 200 projects and contracts that we monitor yearly. And we have a commitment from anywhere to 5 to 20 years to monitor those. Some of them are very easy monitors in that they're what we refer to as desk monitors. But many of them are, you have to go to the site, you have to do an inspection, you have to check on the income levels of the people who are occupying those units. So on top of that, we have our annual contracts that we award to the subrecipients. We have to monitor and audit those as well. So, yes, we definitely have a desire to move towards fewer contracts, larger funding. We also think that will help reduce some of that general fund risk to some of the, you know, on doing something.
Yes. Councilmember Richens?
But there are organizations nationally that do this kind of thing as an outsourced.
I know that there are organizations that you can outsource your housing, you know, your voucher program to. I know that there probably are agencies that we can outsource some of these. We still have an obligation to then monitor them. So right. We are still the grantee. We are still the risk taker in any of the funds that we receive. So if we should outsource it, we still have to go and monitor them and make sure their records are all what we need.
Right, and I'm not sure that any of them have a presence in Phoenix Metro. I haven't heard of any private entities that do this. Are you aware of any?
We can research that.
Yeah, maybe we should look, but you know, I'm not convinced that it's a good move because of. I mean, we just it's not like we shift the liability if shift the monitoring.
If anything, it might.
But there might be some capacity issues that they can handle it and. Since they know how the program works, that they can do it more efficiently, but I'm not.
You're going to cover a little later some of the resources, how we're going to address some of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So from outside resources.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need to put a lot of effort right on to find somebody. I was more curious than anything.
This slide is just really to show that we have seen a continued decrease in those fundings available to us. So for this next fiscal year, we do plan on maintaining 6 vacancies of unfunded positions that we have on our org chart right now. But what we did this year is we really took a strategic look at our positions and the funds we had and some of the upcoming plans that we have to be involved with and where were critical positions versus positions that we might be able to outsource. A couple of the very large plans that we need to participate in is the update of the general the general plan, the housing portion of the general plan. We are also need to start this next year the update of our five-year consolidated plan. Every year to run these programs, there's about six annual plans that we have to roll out to HUD. We have to report on the CAPR, and we have to submit an annual plan as part of the application process. So those, there's a lot of staff time involved with. So we really try to focus on how to add flexibility yet still meet our obligations. So what we are proposing, and this number is a little bit off, is an additional, $136,504, so it's a little bit higher than that, in general fund. Even with that additional general fund for us to administer these programs, we will still be losing two currently filled positions. And we will be reducing one of our financial positions to an admin position. I think that's really...
As eliminating those positions, is that you won't fill vacancies or you'll actually eliminate the positions?
We'll go through our reduction in workforce. So
yes,
by having this discussion early on, what we do then is we've identified the two positions. We work quickly with human resources to begin looking for opportunities within the organization that if there's a vacancy or maybe a pending retirement or something, begin to look at identifying. And it's two positions. We've done with much greater numbers in the past. We think we'll be able to we'll work hard to find a placement, but that's how it works.
Okay.
Yes. Basically, the total general fund that we will be requesting this year in our budget is about $545,000. Now, that does also pay for the position for us to run the human services program as well. Does not include the human services contracts, but it does include the operation and the position allocation for funding those contracts and that program as well. So we have the admin that we're allowed to have out of the grants. We're requesting the $545,000, and that should allow us to really focus on outsourcing a lot of the annual plan, the CAPR, the things that we have to do annually.
So again, just a reminder, one of the things that Tammy is going to do, and she's had some success with it this past year, especially addressing some of the findings that have come up in audits and helping her to get some of her processes in place to kind of get up to best practices. If you've brought in a series of outside consultants. Really almost, we call them consultants, but they come in and actually work on a project.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just providing advice, but they're actually doing deliverables and developing reports. And we've that's been productive for us because these are individuals who come with a lot of expertise, familiar with the HUD officials. They've done this in other communities. So we're buying that expertise. We can hire them for a specific report or project. They come in, complete it, and move on. Tammy's also, I think, done a very good job. As they've come in, her staff has clinged on to them to really try to learn from them. So over time, we can maybe develop some of that, learn from that, not just have someone develop a project for us and turn it over to us, but I think we're trying to develop capacity with our current staff to kind of learn along the way.
Okay. So. Councilmember Kavanaugh, then Councilmember Richards.
Thank you, Tammy. I know that while the council actually never received the copies of the HUD audits related to these programs, I know that you've been doing very good work in responding to the HUD audits, and these are serious issues. I attended a briefing Monday of this week in Washington, D.C. with the Undersecretary of HUD talking about the audits, the new programs that are coming on. For example, the city of Houston is in the process of repaying $16 million to HUD as a result of audits. And so by comparison, I think, just put it in context. But that's not to minimize what you've had to deal with, and I think you've been doing an excellent job in that, and presenting a realistic budget. One of the positive messages I heard from the Undersecretary the other day was that HUD was working very hard to revise the templates and application process because of the complaints that it has heard from communities around the country about the complexity and about the time involved in administering the program. And I understand that by May, I think they're going to be, again, unveiling some more of the changes that they're doing. So I'm hoping that that the input that you and other communities have provided to them will result in a process that at least helps address the administrative burden that, that you have to deal with, because I think these are important programs that have benefited the community, and you and your colleagues in the department have done some great work in very challenging circumstances. But I wanted to appreciate your presentation, particularly again after I heard the Undersecretary speak the other day of the good and the bad and the ugly of what was happening in some of the other communities around the country, that I think you're doing a wonderful job. Thanks.
Thank you. In fact, that new programmer that they're rolling out, I did meet the woman in my training this last week who's rolling that out, and I volunteered Mesa. I said, we will help roll it out if you need somebody to test it. So if we get it, I don't know.
Councilman Richards.
I just wanted to flag for our InterGov folks. I think I saw Miranda come in and others that as we discussed with members of Congress about this program, that one of the most important slides on here is this 5 to 20 year monitoring obligation, that if Congress has been discussing eliminating the home program and making dramatic changes to CDBG, and if they just get rid of that program, they're going to have to get rid of the 5-20 year obligation to monitor those programs as well, because they need to understand that, you know, we contractually are bound to do that. And if that money goes away, we still have to do that unless that burden is also removed. So as we have those conversations, I want to flag that for a few folks to make sure that we keep that in mind and we fight to make sure that we can fulfill our obligations in the long term.
You're expecting, though, that the people you talk to have an understanding or even an awareness that those original programs even exist and that there are those obligations.
We will do a better job at educating our members.
Good luck in trying. Good luck in trying.
You're such a good
person. Councilmember Fenter.
Thanks. Just had a couple of questions on the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, or NSP, that we do. And I appreciate the that, you know, the little quick snapshot. We've purchased 36 homes. We sold 24. It would be interesting to know from NSP 2 and NSP 3, those funds that you're mentioning, kind of what our plan is. Just so you know, from the private sector, what I'm hearing is there's a dramatic change in the existing home sales that are going on in the valley now. Dozens of bids on any and every house that possibly hits the market. So what I worry about with these federal funds and this program is somehow we may be competing with that private sector look and maybe starting to be part of the problem and not some of the solutions. So I'm thinking maybe we need to, at some point near future, reevaluate what we our plans were, our goals, and just kind of see how it goes. And maybe there's another type of housing stock or product that we can look at instead of the single family. So.
And we have not rolled out our NSP 3 program yet. We'll bring that to you and talk about the goals and objectives. We did target the location, but we haven't started that. We don't have NSP 2. We have met all of our obligations, and we're working from program income on NSP 1. But we will definitely bring to you the NSP 3 program as we roll that out.
And maybe we could kind of get some meetings ahead of time with folks and see what that is and come up with a plan that might work where it doesn't compete with the private sector. So that's just a thought.
And as we do that, I think Councilman Fenter raises a good point, but I think we need to remember that our objectives should be, and hopefully they are, different than the private sector. I mean, the private sector seeks to buy houses to either flip them or to turn them into rental units to make a profit, and good for them. Our objective is to enhance the neighborhood, which means that we are willing to spend more because our outcome should be different. And so I'm hoping that as we go in there, we're not competing with the private sector, because our program should be very different than the private sector. I mean, we should, you know, if we're meeting our goals, which is to upgrade and enhance the neighborhood, it means that we are probably going to be making certain investments that don't fit a profit motive pro forma, because profit is not our motive. Our motive is to invest, and our return on that investment is the elevation of the entire neighborhood, which hopefully will enhance additional private investment and we'll give that kind of incentive. So as we go through and design these programs, I hope that we keep that in mind, and that becomes very clear that is our objective, which will keep us, and I know I'm an idealist on this, but will keep us away from that head-to-head competition. Because if we are competing literally head-to-head, then something's out of whack. I mean, we're not doing things right. So I would hope that would be the case, and it would be clear. And I agree with it, Councilman Fender, we need to make sure that those investors and developers that are in understand what our objective is, so that they better recognize that we're not meaning to take the profit from them, but we are hopefully sort of priming the pump for additional investment in that neighborhood. I know that's an idealistic view, and we don't live in a perfect world, but I would hope that would be the driving force in our mission. Councilman Fender.
And I appreciate those. And I use that private sector term broadly. I'm thinking of those first-time homebuyer young couple that finally says, hey, we've hit bottom, and we're ready to move into a neighborhood and make it a better place. And so I think last statistic I saw, it's like 46% of that investor, renter type, you know, rental property. But I think there's now a growing side of that where people are saying, hey, I'm that first-time home buyer, or I'm in that situation. Those are the ones I really don't want to compete with, because I think they meet those same goals that our good mayor is saying, is where young couple comes in, fixes up a home, adds stability to a neighborhood, some young life, and I think there's a lot of those folks. I'm hearing those folks now. So anyway.
Yeah, it was an interesting article in the newspaper, I think just this last week, about how they're getting squeezed out of the market by the investors who walk in with cash and are willing to pay a little bit more. And it's a crazy market out there. So
they are definitely our clientele. We, through the program, have the ability to do home buyer subsidy, so we're able to help them get into a home where they might otherwise not be able to. So, yeah. But yeah, we can bring the program back and we can talk about all that.
Thank you. Any more questions? Thanks. Thank you. Appreciate it. Acknowledge receipt of minutes of boards and committees. Have a motion from the good Dr. Vice Mayor. Second, Councilman Cavan. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended.
I think we're tired.
Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, I believe a few of us were attending the National League of Cities Conference in D.C. this past few days. And I had an invite to attend a meeting at the White House again this time. And we had a little update from the Small Business Administrator about some new programs and if any of our small businesses are hitting roadblocks through their local Small Business Administration, they are to contact Karen Mills directly so we can get you that information. She's the executive director. Or
administrator,
thank you. And some other programs like Joining Forces, which is, you know, bringing veterans back into your community. There's a lot of resources available for us to help our returning veterans. So that was kind of cool. And all in all, we had learned a lot. Got our Mesa, Arizona's name out there even more, and it was productive.
Thank you. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a reminder, this Saturday, March 17th, Councilmember Cavanaugh will be having a green eggs and ham pancake breakfast. Am I saying that? So the celebration of that day. And it will be at Fire Station 210, which would be a first for...
And what is that day?
St. Patty's Day.
Okay.
So it's Fire Station 210, and is this the first time, I believe, for the councilman for your district to have in this station, or have we done one there before? Okay. This is part of the new...
Part of the new council district.
Part of the new council district. So invite everybody to come out from 8 to 10 at Station 210, which is 24th Street and...
Baseline.
Okay. And then Monday, March 19th, there'll be at 3:30. There will be a Sustainability and Transportation Committee meeting, and then that will be followed by our study session and council meeting. The study session for Monday will start at 5 p.m. and will be followed by the council meeting. Thank you.
You may want to also remind people that through the end of this week is the Mesa Festival of Creativity.
Oh, yes.
Over at the MAC, that still goes on. Great spring break activity for
absolutely through the weekend, I believe.
Families through, yeah. You can see the what is that called? The
Mirazola.
Mirazola, but also that building, the harp, the
Earth harp.
Earth harp.
Earth harp. I don't know if that Earth harp will be there this weekend.
Oh, is that? Is it?
Today's the last day.
Yeah.
Oh, today's the last day.
It is cool.
Okay. All right. And you're asking me the hours?
Yeah. I mean, is it like there all day long?
I think there's activities all day long. Ms. Kent?
12 to 9. The harp, though, is, I believe, 1 and then 2:30, 4 and 6.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's programs throughout. There's activities
throughout
the day.
There's many other activities going on.
But there's a lot of things, musical groups, jugglers, and then, of course, Mirazola?
Mirazozo.
Mirazozo. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Great. All righty. Ms. Carr, do we have any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
I have a motion from Councilmember Higgins, a second from Councilmember Fenter to adjourn. All in favor, stand up and walk out. We are adjourned. Thank you.